All right, just gonna get rid of this draft chaff, put it in the old donation box.
Whoa.
There's a goblin char belcher in there.
You take this home, throw it in a pot, add some broth, a potato.
Add a grenzo, a couple of spell bombs. Baby, you got a cube going.
Yes, that's fine, but I would like to focus on my
constructed coaching
thing, Mr. Weathers. I did give you my last $1,100.
Let me tell you a little story about Modern.
I was doing this
regional GP.
Never once touched my per diem.
I go to the vendors, pick up some cheap draft chaff, maybe a damaged card or two. Baby, I got a cube going.
I think I'd like my money back.
All right, ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Great. And allow me to welcome all of our beautiful listeners to another episode of Lucky Paper Radio. My name is Andy. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Anthony Margulies Maddox.
I was thinking about this the other day.
So was I.
It was, yeah.
You know, we get confused a lot this podcast, which is completely
totally
forgivable. Two brown-haired white guys talk about magic. Our first names both begin with A-N. Our last names both begin with M-A. Very reasonable.
It's like more than the same initial. It's like the same... What's the word for the way that sounds sound the same?
Assonance or consonants,
sure,
depending
yeah.
on if it's a consonant or a vowel sound.
Basically the same guy is what you're saying.
I mean, we do have our differences, but obviously in the podcast format, it's totally reasonable to mix us up exactly once. Don't do it twice. You do it twice, it's a you problem. But once, you get forgiven. And this goes back well before the podcast, Anthony, because one of our friends in college, who was our roommate for many years, was having an argument with his mother, who he was upset because he felt that his mother paid more attention to his sister than him. And he said, "You know all these facts about my sister's college roommates. You don't know anything about my roommates." And she said, "Of course I do. I know everything about your roommates." And he said, "You don't even know Andy and Anthony's last name." And she said, "Sure I do. It's Anthony Margulies and Andy Margulies." Which, that just, it sticks in your head
it's
and
great
you just never forget it.
You know that it's not correct for both of our names to be Margulies.
Which is hence the tone shift.
But, once you're pretty sure at least one of us are named Margulies.
Right. You want to get one right at
it's
least.
It's kind of like, she kind of took an interesting sort of gameplay strategy to this interaction with her son.
Right. The second guess, she was like, all right, well, yeah. Maybe I got the first one wrong. I'll at least get one right if I name them both Margulies.
0-2, but respect the effort.
Yeah, very, very good. Yeah, one of those things just you never forget. I think about that at least every month, I would say, probably.
Why was I thinking about this so specifically the other day?
I was talking to Victoria about it because we were laughing about
that
it over the weekend. It's just, it's so good.
I mean, classic Andy and Anthony Margulies.
Anyway, this episode, Anthony, is going to be a return to a format that we have done one episode of before, and we were like, is this format interesting for people? And the feedback overwhelmingly was yes, the format is interesting. This is our emergent cube design by example format, where we're going to take one specific card and we are going to take the first couple steps to designing a cube around or directly inspired by that card. We did this formerly with trade routes, and a couple of people, forgive me, I don't remember who, I don't remember usernames, but a couple of people did recommend this specific change, which is that this time, Anthony and I have both done the exercise separately without communicating with one another, and we're going to compare notes as to where we went. The card we're focusing on this time is Goblin Charbelcher.
Yeah, I mean, this is honestly how I work on, have designed a lot of my cubes, where it's just like,
here's
a card that I think is cool. Let me figure out how to make an environment where this particular card works. And it doesn't necessarily mean I'm making the Goblin Charbelcher cube, where the cube is all about Goblin Charbelcher, which is another approach you can take. You know, you can make the all Ornithopter's cube. That's an option.
It's an option.
But it's more just about using it as a starting point. And, you know, maybe the end result of the cube after some playtesting might not even include that card, but it sort of is just a way to get some ideas going.
And Goblin Charbelcher specifically is a card that I have wanted to fit into a cube for a while, and it's hard to do. So I think we gave ourselves a difficult challenge here.
Yes.
So we're going to come back to that, but first we got a couple of other business to take care of. First of all, I do want to mention that because we had our episode with Sam last week, we knew we'd get a bunch of new eyes on the show because of that. We did finally go through and make some long overdue updates to some things, Anthony. We updated our show art, which most of you will have noticed, in your podcatcher of choice. So
it looks great. I know you spent a lot of time working on that lettering, and I think it's a lot more fun.
Thank
Looking
you.
At the old art, it's like, oh, that looks really
so
flat.
So, like, just mundane and lifeless. Yeah. And to be fair, I remember making that art and being like, well, I want to put out this episode we just edited. I'll just make anything in 5 minutes, and we'll replace. If the show takes hold, Anthony, I'll replace it around episode 10 or 20, I says to myself. Here we are, episode 200. So
is this episode 200?
No, not quite.
Okay.
This is 197.
Okay.
So close. We're really close. And we've had many bonus episodes along the way. If you count bonus episodes, I think this is like 206 or something. So a lot of podcasts. But yeah, it took that long to finally replace it. We did that. We also did something you will not have noticed, which is that we updated our trailer. So if you're a regular listener to the show, you probably have no reason to listen to the trailer. You wouldn't notice that it's been updated. But that, too, dated from, I think, the 12th-ish episode of the show is when we first made the trailer. So it's been a long time. That badly needed updating for audio quality reasons, for vibes reasons. But that means that this is a great opportunity for you to share this show with some friends of yours, someone in the magic community you think might enjoy it, because that's the only way we can possibly find more people to listen to this show. We're not going to do anything that resembles marketing ever.
Yeah, and along with that, you might recommend our latest episode with Sam, because I think that was just an awesome, awesome episode that I really enjoyed recording, and I hope other people have enjoyed listening to as well.
Yeah. So that teaser, I'm going to put it in the show notes. It's both in the RSS feed, so it'll show up on Spotify and whatnot as the teaser for the show, the trailer for the show. I also put it on YouTube with a little graphic with some waveforms dancing around, which I think is a nice way to consume it. So I'll put all those links in the show notes. And if you want to share the show with a friend, that's a great way to do it. A little more business, Anthony, because we got a P.O. box now. We've had it for a few weeks, and we've got our first mail in from fans. We've received two things. I won't go into the other things we received that I thought were for us, but turned out were for a mail order porn company that used to have our P.O. box.
Did you get a discount on that box or something?
Nope. And they keep coming in, I'll tell you. So.
Okay.
We're not going to go into that, though. We're just going to talk about the things we got from listeners. So I have one thing here from listener Jed. I should say, too, if you send us mail and you don't say otherwise, we will credit you with your first name. If you don't want your first name on the show, say in your letter, don't say my name. That's reasonable, right? I mean, this is a postcard. We just went through the mail so everyone could read
it. Yeah, but that's a good shout-out. I probably shouldn't read the first name off the mailing address before I open this envelope.
Yeah, then maybe that envelope will say inside.
Do not read this!
Don't say who
this
was.
I guess we have editing power.
Anyway, Jed sent us a El Coyote Cojo. Coyo? How do you say that Spanish word? C-O-J-O?
I am the wrong person to ask about pronunciation.
I think it's Cojo. El Coyote Cojo. It's a little postcard of you know, I honestly don't know what it is. It's
cowboy hats?
It's like space cowboys.
Space cowboys.
Well, it's
thematic.
It's not really space. It's lit. No, the pool table is clearly a space pool table.
Is this like
table.
A vintage postcard?
I have no idea. It's clearly a space pool table. And, oh, no, this lady has an Android arm. Yeah, this is definitely space cowboy stuff. I'm guessing it's from a video game. Is this like a... If I had to take a guess, Anthony Margulies style, I would say this is from Cyberpunk 20 whatever, that video game that came out. It's got that kind of vibe to it. Anyway, Jed says, what are the most forgiving mechanics for cube design, i.e. mechanics that are still fun and effective even when you can't effectively playtest the cube? My answer would be Adventures and the Zendikar Rising Modal Double Face cards.
I think that those two are great callouts because neither of those, like obviously you can have highly synergistic interactions with them, like you can have your Lucky Clover that pays you off for having a bunch of adventures, but on their surface they're just mechanics that you don't need really any support, like you can just, any kind of card design can function with those mechanics, so they'll just work on their own. So we're talking about forgiving. That makes a lot of sense. I don't even know where to go from there.
Flashback, cycling,
yes, great.
I think some of the all-time great mechanics are going to be relatively forgiving in the sense that you will be able to evaluate them fairly accurately without doing an abundance of playtesting, which is maybe not true for more novel mechanics that you don't have as much experience with as a player. And I think those are also just the tried and tested mechanics in terms of balance. They've been designing cards with those kinds of mechanics for a long time. Kicker and kicker variations, I think
kicker,
I would put in this category
yeah.
as well, that it's unlikely they will have totally broken something with a card like that. Whereas when they do make a new mechanic, look at something like Umezawa's Jite or Smuggler's Copter, they do tend to kind of break it the first time, especially because they always want the new thing to be powerful. They want people to be caring about the new mechanic, but also they haven't gotten their sort of development chops under them. So I think newer mechanics, mechanics that have fewer cards to their name are probably a little less forgiving and more risky. If you don't have that much time to playtest your cube and you want to make sure that you're being safe with your choices.
It's much easier for some reason for me to think of the opposite category, and other things that fall into that for me are things like mutate or megamorph, you know, things that just take, maybe even foretell, just because it's like, if your opponent is doing it, you've never seen the mechanic before, it's kind of clunky to explain without, you know, pulling it up on Scryfall and explaining some example card. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of individual cards that if you throw it into a cube without a lot of context, it might either set expectations weirdly or just cause challenges during gameplay. But yeah, I mean, those things, Flashback is, I think, a really good example because it's just, you know, does what it says and is a super flexible mechanic so that there are lots of cards that, you know, already have that mechanic.
Love me some Flashback. You've got a letter over there, Anthony.
I have a letter.
Crack that bad boy open. I appreciate you doing it into the mic. That's good Foley work.
Oh my God, we got a stack of Magic cards. This letter is directed to you, Andy. Enjoy these cards for your cube. I've played and opened all these in drafts. Thank you, and me, Anthony, especially for the newest episode focused on inclusion. That's from Joe in California. Thank you so much, Joe.
All right, what's Joe got for us here? Oh, this is stuff for my Ornithopter cube.
Hell yeah.
Thank you, Joe, for the Ornithopter cube cards.
Nice little thank you card.
Yeah, actually, thinking back on it, this might be because we actually did a trade and not because he sent fan mail to the show. But, yeah, same thing. It's all the same. It's all the same P.O. box. So. Anyway, if you want to send mail to us, you can send it to P.O. Box 4855, Baltimore, Maryland, 21211. Putting that in the show notes, too. But, yeah, that's a pretty safe way to actually get your question or comment on the show.
Yeah, you can also...
At least for now, until we get inundated with paper mail, if that ever happens.
You can also email us, and it might get lost in the inbox. And did I'm you ever so respond sorry, to Jason? Jason? If I haven't finished my email to your about your recipe, honestly, I might just test that recipe this weekend that I've drafted up. But we'll see. We'll see if I manage to respond.
Jason sent a lovely, lengthy email about Szechuan cooking, and I was like, Anthony, when are you going to respond to this? And he was like, I've been working on it. It's very
the
lengthy.
The email got so long, I was like, I need to put headings in this email. And then I sort of had a little existential crisis and walked away from my computer.
All right, Anthony, let's get to the meat of it. More emergent cube design by example. We are talking about the card Goblin Charbelcher as our focus for this episode. For those that don't know, I'll hit you with the rules text. It is 4 generic mana for an artifact. It has an activated ability for 3 generic mana and tapping it. You reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a land card. Goblin Charbelcher deals damage equal to the number of non-land cards revealed this way to target creature or player. If the revealed land card was a mountain, Goblin Charbelcher deals double that damage instead. Put the revealed cards on the bottom of your library in any order you do choose. It is not random.
So can we break down what this does a little bit more carefully? Because honestly, when you, I was pretty sure I knew the card by heart, and then I went and started thinking about it when you suggested this, and I think I got the rules wrong initially. So cost 4 mana, 3 mana to activate it, you tap it, so you're only doing that once a turn. You always do at least 1 damage with this, right? Because
correct.
You reveal the card, even if it's a mountain, that still counts towards the cards that are revealed.
Well,
and
if
then
it's a mountain, you
if it is a mountain,
damage.
You double it. So you're always dealing 1 damage. It scales up depending on how far the first land is in your deck, and it's double if it's a mountain.
Correct.
How do you think this card generally was intended to be played? I mean, another nuance to it is if you have no lands in your deck, you do still reveal all those cards, so even though you don't show a land, you're not going to get the double bonus for it being a mountain, obviously, but you still do damage equal to the number of cards you have. How do you think this card was intended to be played with? Like, is it just a fair card, or is this a weird combo card?
I think it was probably designed with both applications in mind. It originally was printed in Mirrodin, and I think there's definitely some of that, like, goblin randomness here. We see random variants in effect show up a lot on goblin cards because goblins are weird and random. So the fact that you're dealing damage, but you can't control how much, is very on flavor for goblin stuff. I also would not be surprised to think that they, when they designed this card, were thinking, I wonder if there's a way this can be manipulated in constructed magic to just deal 20 in one shot, basically.
Yeah.
Which is what we see it actually doing in Constructed Magic these days. And it is fringe viable in both Modern and Legacy and even Vintage, as there are so many cards now that function as lands or mana sources, but are not land cards in your deck.
Right.
The most obvious example being the aforementioned Modal Double-Face lands from Zendikar Rising and beyond. You know, those cards, you can play them as lands, but they are not lands when they're revealed to Goblin Charbelcher, so you just flip your whole deck and deal 60 to your opponent or whatever. But you can go back, you know, years and years and years to people just playing things like Land Grant and stuff like that to play super low mana source decks to still make Goblin Charbelcher work in Eternal Magic. I think it's a very evocative card, but difficult to make work in Cube, I think, which is part of why I chose it for this episode, is I want to talk about a card that would be difficult to make work.
Yeah, the other sort of rules technicality about this that I think really, really informs the way this card plays is that you choose the target before you reveal the cards. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I believe.
So you can't just be like, okay, I'm revealing three cards, now I'll point this at your 3-3, or I only revealed two, so I'll point it at your bear. You have to make a commitment, which means sometimes it could just totally whiff, or, you know, if you're pointing it at your opponent, then it doesn't really matter, like, more is better, but you're still dealing damage.
Yeah, I mean, like any activated ability, you're going to have to choose all the targets to put it on the stack, and then the resolution is when you start revealing stuff and find out how much damage you're going to do. So that is a downside to the card. Downside is not exactly right, because
it's a downside to the power level of the card, but maybe an upside to the goblin randomness of it.
Well, I mean, to say it's a downside, you're not comparing it to anything. There is no version of this where you don't have to choose targets before you activate it, but
sure.
If you misinterpreted the rules, then that would be a downside you would become aware of once you learned the actual rules.
I think as a player, it is a thing that makes it more difficult to play with, and like there's a fail case to it, right? Which wouldn't be there if you could target retroactively.
Correct. So, as I mentioned, we did our exercise here separately. We've both gone through and done this emergent cube design exercise, which I'm not even going to bother explaining because just us talking about it will explain it better than me trying to explain it sort of in a meta sense. But let's start with you, Anthony, because I tend to be much more long-winded, for better or worse. So let's hear what you did with Goblin Charbelcher as your focus.
So honestly, what I think I did is I found a couple dead ends and then maybe a couple areas that I think we can explore a little bit further together. The first thing is kind of what you mentioned already, which I think is the level one strategy here is I can do a lot of damage with this if I can just not have any lands in my deck, or have very few lands in my deck, and treat this not as a card that I'm going to point at my opponent's creatures repeatedly, but as kind of a combo piece, I'm going to try and get all the lands out of my deck and then deal a bunch of damage to you all at once. So, like you said, there are a lot of options like this. Just to sort of touch on a few categories, Kazul's Fury is this modal double face land, so it's a tap mountain on the back, but on the front it is a spell, which means when you're revealing it from your library, it's going to be a spell. And if we could just pack a ton of these in a cube, then Goblin Charbelcher would very reliably be more powerful. And I'm kind of coming to this from the angle of this card doesn't strike me as something that's going to be good at face value in like a vintage cube. So
certainly
what
not.
I'm trying to think through is how do I make this card look appealing when it wouldn't necessarily in a vacuum?
And we should say, too, we have a cards mention page for every episode, but it would be especially useful for this episode because we're not going to read all the rules text of all the cards we're going to mention. So if you want to follow along and make sure you know all the rules text of all the cards we're talking about, you can check that out at luckypaper.co/podcast/197/cards. It's also going to be linked in the show notes, which is easier than typing something into your browser. So do that.
In a similar vein, we also have things that have mountain cycling. So there's a bunch of things that have mountain cycling for two or basic land cycling from the history of Magic that are, again, not actually lands. So it's functioning as a land in your like gameplay and your strategy, but in your deck, it's not stopping your Charbelcher from Charbelching. One of these, for example, is Olyphant. This is 6 mana for a 6/4 with trample. It's got some other text, and it also had mountain cycling for 1. I think that these mountain cyclers or land cyclers that cost 1 rather than 2 have gotten into a lot of cubes and have gotten a lot of people more excited about playing cards like this because the modality is really powerful on their own.
The other mode is also just very powerful on these cards, and land cycling for 1 is just a really high ceiling.
It is.
Really high floor,
Troll of Khazad-dûm from the Lord of the Rings. I think this particular cycle is from Lord of the Rings. Are just, yeah, really powerful cards. Cycling one means it's kind of just like a tapped land, which when you have that modality of a pretty big threat later, or even a thing that you can reanimate, makes these cards pretty powerful. It's not like Kazul's Fury, where you can literally put 0 lands in your deck if you had enough of these and a strategy to make them work. You do need 1 or 2, but still, you know, these are little nudges towards making the Charbelcher a little bit more appealing. The last thing in this category, which is also maybe kind of obvious, is just fetch lands will thin your deck, so even though you might have more lands at the beginning of the game, you're going to slowly strip those out of your deck, and that really does have an impact. I mean, I've noticed this in cubes that have a lot of fetch lands. Your deck does get pretty thin of lands. Is this where you started as well? Can we get a little spoiler in your...
Yeah, I don't want to spoil too much, but the very first card I put down was actually Ash Barons.
Ash Barons.
And Prismatic Vista and Fabled Passage were the
first
ones I put down.
Yeah, I mean, that functions similarly to a fetch land,
right.
In that, you know, it is still a land, but the deck thinning is relevant. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, so the next kind of category I went down is, okay, how do we really optimize this? Obviously, we have to talk about Trench Gorger. This is 8 mana for a 6/6. It's a creature with trample. It's a Leviathan. When it enters the battlefield, you may search your library for any number of land cards, exile them, shuffle your library. If you do, Trench Gorger's power and toughness each become equal to the number of cards exiled this way.
You ever want mana severance attached to a giant Leviathan?
Yeah.
I used to think this card was broken when I first started playing Magic.
I remember you playing this in Commander decks, and I don't really remember why.
I was like, it's going to be a... What is it 7 or 8 mana? What is it?
8 mana.
I was like, it's going to be an 8 mana 30-30, so get wrecked.
Yeah, Mana Severance I've got here, Endless Horizons. Parallel Thoughts is another one that's a little bit more complex. It basically like lets you separate your deck into two piles and draw from which way you want. These are all weird cards that just let you make Char Belcher work in this full combo way. It's like, I play this one card, I take all the lands out of my deck, now I can one-shot you, assuming hopefully I have enough cards left in my deck to actually deal that much damage to you. You know, this is the extreme case. Adding some fetch lands and some modal double face cards can nudge Char Belcher to being a little bit more powerful. I just don't think... I couldn't find a way to make these cards otherwise also interesting. You know, this 8 mana creature is... What else was I going to do with it? So if it's not spoiling anything that you came up with, do you see any way to actually make these cards useful outside of exactly Goblin Char Belcher?
No, I didn't pursue that route at all.
Okay.
I think it's interesting you're starting with all the things you're not actually going to pursue.
Well, we have to build up tension somehow.
Okay, sure.
So the last thing that I will put in this category that I think does actually make a lot of sense because it is powerful in other places is just Sensei's Divining Top. It's a thing that lets you repeatedly look at and shuffle the top 3 cards of your library, so you can be pretty confident, or you can at least have some measure of knowing what the Char Belcher is going to do, so kind of a way to, as a player, patch that strategic hole of, I don't know how much damage this is going to do, so I don't know if I want to just deal 1 damage to my opponent, or if I want to try and kill one of my opponent's large creatures. This gives you back that flexibility, and Sensei's Dividing Top is a much easier card to find other things to branch off of and make that work.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil much of where I went, but I will say that a lot of my exploration hinged upon just trying to think about how good the base case of Goblin Char Belcher actually is.
Right.
And comparing it to Cursed Scroll, which is a 1 mana artifact that you also pay 3 and tap to activate, and you have to have a small hand for this to work reliably, but it allows you to do 2 damage repeatably to things. That card is quite strong in a lot of contexts. I mean, it certainly doesn't hold up in like modern Eternal Cubes if you're playing all the crazy cards we've got these days, but it had a storied constructed history. It was a very popular card in cubes going back 5-10 years because it's just a very efficient, repeatable source of damage that any deck can play. And that kind of made me think that, obviously, you know, 4 mana to play, 3 mana to activate, 7 mana before you get any damage out of this means that I think overall the cube is going to have to be on the slower side if you want this card to be actually viable. But I actually don't know if only revealing 2 or 3 cards on average is necessarily like, oh, this is not good enough. Like, that might be excellent, I think, in the right context. So a lot of my exploration was like, let's just make sure that we're always hitting 2 cards at least, and then this becomes a differently limited Cursed Scroll instead of this like combo card.
Totally. So that's actually exactly where I went next, is looking at other things that Char Belcher can do. Sure, it's dealing damage. There's a lot of base we can explore there. It's also just actually putting cards from the top of my library onto the bottom, which means you can actually just get value out of that on its own. So if we have cards like Future Sight or Experimental Frenzy, or the one that I think really works well here is Mystic Forge, that you can look at the top card of your library. Maybe the top card of your library is not something that you want, so you can actually use the Char Belcher to double dip on both either damaging the opponent or dealing with your opponent's creatures while also getting some extra card selection. I think Mystic Forge is especially interesting here because both being artifacts, that starts to paint a much clearer picture of, maybe we just put this in a context where the base rate of 7 mana to deal 2 damage is maybe not worth it, but if it's also an artifact, it's also giving me some top deck manipulation, starts to put it into a strategy where, into a context where I see multiple things kind of pulling me towards putting Char Belcher in my deck.
That was definitely one of the nodes I went down as well. So I've got all those cards here on my list too.
I'm not surprised. Okay, but I want to talk about one more card that interacts with weird zones that I think is the coolest. You mentioned that Char Belcher doesn't put them in a random order. It puts them in an order of your choosing on the bottom of your deck. And there's one card, to my knowledge, that cares about the bottom card of your library, which is Grenzo Dungeon Warden. This is X black red for a legendary Goblin Rogue. It's a 2/2, and it's about filled with X 1/1 counters on it. It has the ability you can pay to and put the bottom card of your library into your graveyard. If it's a creature card with power less than or equal to Grenzo's power, put it into the battlefield.
And also a goblin.
It also, they both say goblin, so it's that's important. This is just like a cool, weird card that I remember actually playing this in Masters 25, and it's really hard to make work, and like looking at the bottom of your library is weird. It's a thing that almost
physically
never
awkward.
Cares
yeah.
about. Yeah, but... if I have, again, this is just like a little nudge to, if I have the Charbelcher and I know I have this control and we're talking potentially about a slower environment, this could be the kind of value engine that ends up being really fun and appealing here.
Yeah, that's a great call out. I really like that call out. It also is a legendary creature, which means for our purposes, the first thing I'm going to do once I decide to include that card in the cube is go look at EDH Rec and look at the top cards in that deck. Because even yeah. though that'll be limited to just red and black cards and colorless cards because of color identity rules, it will give you a sense of if there's anything you might have missed in your Scryfall searches that also helps you put cards on the bottom of your library in a specific order or cares about them at all, the Commander players will have found it. So I use EDH Rec quite a bit when I'm designing cubes just to look at,
yeah.
here's a legendary card that has a theme I care about. Here's a way to find cards about that theme.
Yeah, and I think that it being a goblin is also not nothing. Something else that I was thinking about is going a little bit down a path of maybe Goblin Tribal makes sense here. Not because... you know, there's a relationship between these cards that is not completely specious. Like, it doesn't actually matter that it's called Goblin Charbelcher. But I think that does make a difference to how players perceive it. And they see this and they're like, yeah. oh, okay. I mean, the fact that it cares about mountains and it says goblin in the title, that's already starting to make a connection because players know that goblins are usually red. So there's, I think that that name is still important to some degree. And if you're putting other things that say goblin that work with it, that's also potentially going to nudge players. Even if, like, this time-traveling supercomputer shouldn't care about that, you're not dealing with a time-traveling supercomputer.
Love it. Love Grenzo here.
So I'm feeling good about sort of going in this direction of maybe we have some goblins. Maybe we have some artifact theme. There's a lot more we could talk about in terms of, like, top deck and bottom deck manipulation, which I'm sure you'll have a lot of ideas as well. But I wanted to think about what else can we do on the opposite of the field? Because it's relevant what you're putting in your deck with a particular card. It's also relevant... what is the environment that this card is in, and what is it going to see on the opposite side of the table that's going to make it work or not? And there's sort of like a very concrete example and a less concrete example of cards that I thought were interesting. There's a whole class of cards in blue that are illusions that whenever you target them, they get destroyed. So one that we've seen in a lot of different
cubes
is
I love this.
Phantasmal Image, which is basically a clone that enters the battlefield as a copy of another creature. But if it's targeted by any spell or ability, it gets sacrificed. So I'm thinking of other ways to potentially mitigate that challenge of the randomness of Charbelcher. Well, Charbelcher will always destroy Phantasmal Image no matter what its power is. And there's a bunch of these different cards. Labyrinth Guardian is another one, and Kira the Great Glass Spinner is something that you need to target at least twice to be able to interact with it. So having a Charbelcher on the table just means you can Charbelch it and then actually use your Lightning Bolt or your Shock to get through and kill it. So I feel like there's this really interesting sort of like blue illusion deck that could function in this environment that, you know, because we're doing something weird in red, maybe red isn't the aggressive deck. Maybe it's a more controlling deck that's trying to slowly grind people out with Charbelcher. The blue illusions might be the foil to that. And generally speaking, the blue illusions are costed in such a way that you're getting a overstated creature for that drawback. So I think that blue playing this aggressive role could be really interesting here. A sort of related thing to that is just creatures that have one toughness, which means you know that the Charbelcher will always work, but have really important utility that it's worth spending a bunch of mana. So the card that like really stands out to me here is Mother of Runes, which is a card that I don't know wouldn't always advocate for putting in a cube, but yeah, the combination of being a threat that needs to be answered can always be answered by Charbelcher, both because of its one toughness and the fact that it cannot grant itself protection from colorless. It just is like a card that I can imagine putting in this environment and then players maybe not noticing immediately, but after a couple drafts would start to say, hey, this Charbelcher keeps doing work. Again, like I'm sort of using this as a stand-in for creatures that have low toughness that have really relevant impact on the battlefield, and the fact that all those details like really fit, I think that's the prime example. All right, and then sort of my last node on this journey, you already mentioned Cursed Scroll. I think that putting this into context where there are other similar effects, and obviously there's nothing quite like Charbelcher.
That is something I definitely thought of when I was making my list. There really is nothing quite yeah. like it. Like, I think Cursed Scroll is about the closest I could find. I mean, there are some really bad cards that are ostensibly kind of similar, like Aladdin's Ring or whatever, but there's no other card that is in the same realm of playability as Charbelcher and does a similar thing.
Yeah, but Curse Scroll, I think, is a good example. And if we pair that with cards like Wildfire, or there's a ton of, you know, red, deal a bunch of damage to everything, Anger of the Gods type effects, pairing those with artifacts that slowly attrition your opponent to death, I think that that, again, starts to create an interesting theme, an interesting strategy that red could be interested in that could be in contrast to this, like, weird blue illusion theme.
Okay.
Okay. That's kind of where my journey is right now. And I feel like there's obviously a lot of threads of, like, can we explore a bunch more small creatures that are relevant that make Charbelcher interesting? I'd love to just think more about this illusion theme and more about, like, red control decks.
I like this.
Okay.
Let me explain.
You don't sound totally confident.
Well, here's what I'll say. I think
I didn't go deep enough.
Well, you said they were, like, broad abstract ideas. I think some of them are way more specific than I anticipated.
Okay.
Like, the illusion thing, for example, is a very novel interaction, and you definitely focus a lot more on this, like, downside of Charbelcher than I did. But also, Charbelcher is just a really inefficient way to repeatedly target things. Like, if you do have a illusion deck in the cube, you're almost accidentally guaranteed to have multiple things that are way better at repeatedly targeting things than Charbelcher. Unless you are very careful to not include them. Is it Dismiss into Dream, that enchantment that gives all creatures your opponents control the Phantasm ability?
It costs, what, a million?
I think it's six or seven?
Yeah, I definitely looked at Dismiss into Dream. It's a 7-mana enchantment that gives all of your creatures the illusion effect.
All of your opponent's creatures.
All of your opponents, correct. Specifically opponents.
I don't know. It's just, I guess it's a little more specific than I thought. But let me talk about where I went, and then we can compare.
Okay.
We can compare notes. So, like I said, the first couple cards I thought of were Ash Barons, Prismatic Vista, Fabled Passage. And that's because the first thing I was thinking is there are two ways, I think, to make it so you're more likely to flip a mountain with Goblin Charbelcher than not.
Only put mountains in your deck?
Well, no, I think one way is, I mean, obviously, as a player, you can just play mono red, but as a cube designer, one way is to include a lot of non-basic lands with the mountain subtype.
Yes.
And that just basically takes you down the same mana base route that a lot of my cubes have gone. Multiple fetch lands, multiple shock lands, or natural duels, just lots of things have the mountain subtype, and then you can even be playing multiple colors and still much more reliably hit a mountain than otherwise, because just a lot of your cards have the mountain subtype. The other thing, which I have not explored before, and I decided to go down this route just because I've never really done it, was actually trying to make a cube where the lands you would have in play would almost always be basics. And you can fix your mana by going and getting different basics. And there's still a lot of non-basic lands in the cube, where, like, I think I would include multiple copies of Ash Barons, multiple copies of Fabled Passage or Prismatic Vista. Like, I would break Singleton on that to make this work. So there'd still be plenty of fixing lands in the cube, but those cards are never sitting in play as a dual land, right? They're just always getting another basic. And I thought it'd be interesting to focus on getting basics out of your deck as a means of both thinning it, so you're more likely to hit mountains, and also just you have fewer non-basic lands in your deck because you're also playing a bunch of Cultivates, a bunch of Rampant Growths, a bunch of Journeyer's Kite. Are you familiar with Journeyer's Kite?
Oh, classic. It's an artifact that lets you tutor up basic lands.
It sure does.
Three mana and 2 mana activation?
2 and 3. You almost got it.
Oh, damn.
Very, very close. Yeah, I pulled that out first and was just like, let's explore a mana base where you're just pulling lands out of your deck at a high rate and all the fixing is going to go get you a basic.
Okay, so you're just saying, like, as an alternative to the fixing being in the... Because obviously you would, as the Charbelcher player, rather have typed duels that have mountain.
Yeah, I'm not even going to put them in the cube, though, is what I'm saying.
So you're saying that this is just a twist of the whole environment that everybody's going to be thinning their deck heavily.
Yeah, and the reason I also came to this is because I think that the fetch duel mana base in some combination is really good at enabling efficient decks, and this is an environment where I want Goblin Charbelcher to be good, so I'm okay if everybody is going and getting tapped lands, basically, or, you know, paying mana to go and get basic,
sure,
which is effectively a tap land. And if it's an environment where Goblin Charbelcher is good, maybe Journeyer's Kite can also be good. Maybe. I'm not sure, but it's a question. Open question to be answered. So like you did, I'm going to, like, those are the cards I'm going to reference as an illusion of an entire category of cards. You can do a Scryfall search to go search for all the cards that go get basic lands out of your deck. There are zillions. They exist in many different forms, but that is what I was approaching for, sort of the mana fixing as a means of making Charbelcher a little more viable, just thinning everyone's deck. And where that led me was to a Cycling Matters deck, because if I'm breaking Singleton on Ash Barons, I'm playing a bunch of cards with basic land
you
cycling,
say this, you
like
say
Migratory
this
Route.
So often it's lost on meaning.
I mean, to be fair, I've cut it from the Neoclassical cube. Just because
right,
I've explored
right.
it before doesn't mean that I can't come back to it, jerk. But there's a lot of cards that pay off cycling. We mentioned cycling in our question from a listener at the beginning about mechanics that are pretty safe in terms of being forgiving in cube designs. So I think cycling is definitely one of those. It's been returned to many times. And so we've gotten a wide variety of different types of payoffs for the cycling deck. My favorites are like Astral Drift and Lightning Rift. These are the ones I tried to play in the Neoclassical cube, and why it didn't work there is a whole other conversation. But if there's a bunch of Ash Barons, if there's a bunch of Migratory Routes and other cards with basic land cycling, which I would want there to be to enable the mana fixing I just described, then you have a pretty easy entry ramp to a Cycling Matters deck. But then where that took me, the slight variation on that that took me down was trying to answer the question of what does aggro look like here? And your answer was maybe a blue illusion deck. I think my answer is most of the aggro red-white cycling cards from Ikoria, which I was struck by the fact that, so Ikoria was released right after the pandemic started, which meant that there was nobody really playing in paper at all. There was still a lot of play going on online, obviously. I think the bigger factor was that in that format, the red-white cycling deck was really, really strong, and it was really strong on the back of one card, and that card was Zenith Flare, which was that 4-mana uncommon that just dealt damage equal to the number of cards with cycling in your graveyard to your opponent, I think, is the rules text.
Yeah.
But it gained you life, too, or something. It was a really strong card that...
I said, yeah, I didn't look up the card.
It doesn't matter. But that was the hallmark card for the red-white cycling deck in Ikoria, which I think had the byproduct of making it so this, like, otherwise aggressive creature-based theme with things like Flourishing Fox and Valiant Rescuer and Savai Thundermane really just kind of got outshined by just the card Zenith Flare. So I've kind of just cribbed a huge part of the aggressive red-white cycling deck from Ikoria because that's now a thematic aggro deck, right? Because it ties into the mana fixing, it ties into Astral Slide and Astral Drift, which are not the most aggressive cards ever printed for obvious reasons. You know, 3 mana doesn't affect the board until you do other stuff, and then even when it does affect the board, it's kind of fiddly. But it like connects those things together in an interesting way, and I think is also an appropriate power level aggro deck. If you're trying to kill your opponent with Flourishing Fox and Snare Tactician and Reptilian Reflection, that's going to take a lot longer than, you know, a bunch of 1-mana 2/1s or whatever.
I mean, Flourishing Fox is also potentially like a 1-mana 5/5.
Yeah, a lot of things are potentially things.
Mm-hmm.
The one card from a set other than Ikoria that I was excited to put in here was Flameblade Adept from Hour of Devastation, which is the 1-mana 1/2 with Menace that whenever you cycle or discard a card, it gets +1/+0 to end of turn. It slots in perfectly, even though it's not from that particular block. But that was kind of the beginnings of an aggro deck. And I took that one little step further, and I said, how can I get this aggro deck to want to play Astral Slide or Astral Drift? These are cards that, enchantments that allow you to flicker a creature whenever you cycle a card, in broad strokes. And that led me to cheap creatures that have ETBs to deal damage directly to their opponent, like Viashino Pyromancer, and specifically I'm excited about Keldon Marauders and Keldon Champion, these kind of throwbacks to early aggressive red creatures that deal damage when they enter the battlefield. Marauder's case, when it enters or leaves the battlefield. So flickering that with the Astral Slide or Astral Drift is quite powerful. Again, these are also kind of mopey aggro cards by modern standards, which is what we're going to need, I think, to keep Goblin Charbelcher in the realm of viability.
Yeah, I like that there's a lot more sort of direct damage that you're talking about, which sort of feeds into a strategy of not just, I'm going to play my creatures and attack you, but more like, I'm still kind of assembling this machine where Charbelcher feels very much at home.
Yeah, it feels like you could maybe get in some early damage with your Flourishing Fox or your Valiant Rescuer or whatever. And
I mean,
then
get in there one time with Keldon Marauders.
Sure, or even I'm saying when you get to the late game, your deck could have reach by means of flickering your Viashino Pyromancer over and over again with your Astral Slide by cycling lands you don't need anymore. Like, that is the way that that deck could have reach instead of having just burn spells, which are not thematic and also, again, might be a little too powerful. Here you got to work a little bit to deal that damage around your opponent's blockers. The next route I went down is not one you mentioned, and looking at the card Goblin Charbelcher, I think one of the biggest things holding it back is the cost of that activation. 3 mana is a lot to repeatedly activate it. 4 mana to get it in play is a lot too, but you only pay that once as opposed to multiple times, and I think if the card is good, you're activating it many times, probably, right? I don't realistically think you're going to have a cube environment where you're going to activate it and just one-shot your opponent, aside from getting very, very lucky or maybe designing a cube with modified rules or something. So aside from that, I think you're going to activate it a lot if it's going to be good, and that means that that additional cost really adds up. So the next thing I looked at was cards that had synergy with activated abilities, and specifically of artifacts when possible. The two sort of primary cards that led me to was Zerta the Dawnwaker, which is the companion that decreases the activated ability cost of all of your activations, and also you can companion if all of your permanents have activated abilities. I think that card just makes Charbelcher a lot better, and this is one of the spaces where I really like the companions, because if you have Zerta in your pool, and you take Goblin Charbelcher, and you can actually draft a deck that meets the restriction that Zerta offers, then the Charbelcher is just a lot better all the time, because you always have access to Zerta if you want it. So it really does make Charbelcher a lot better, because you don't have to draw the second half of your two-card combo. You're always going to have access to that other card to make the Charbelcher activation only one mana instead of three mana, which I think makes a huge difference.
Companioning Zerta would be difficult, but but when you're designing a cube from scratch, you can certainly set the path.
Well, remember that Zerta was also in Ikoria, and part of the reason it worked in Ikoria was because of a cycling theme, because cycling is an activated ability. So,
how many times do you think people companioned this card in Limited?
I think it happened a fair bit, actually.
Really?
Yeah, we could check the 17 lands data, I think, and figure it out.
I'm shocked.
I think it's definitely possible. I had a sealed deck where I companioned Zerta, and it was fantastic. I think it's not out of the realm of possibility you could design a cube where that could work, and if you can companion it, it's very strong, so I don't want it to be super easy, right? I don't want you to just get it for free, because I think that would pretty quickly outshine the power level of, you know, an environment where you can activate Goblin Charbelcher. But if I had Zerta in my pool and had an inkling that I might be able to companion it, I would be much more excited to see a Goblin Charbelcher coming down the pack than I would otherwise. The next card this led me to is a bit of a spicy one. It's Kirkesh Onake Ancient. I think it's Onake. I just searched on YouTube to try and find a video pronouncing the word, and I failed to find that. Actually, you want to get really doomer for a second?
No.
I discovered that there's a whole like genre of YouTube videos that are how to pronounce this word, but it's just a computer voice, and it's often doing it wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But who cares? Because just turn out videos, and people will look them up, and you'll get views. I was looking up how to pronounce a fairly obscure word recently, and I found a bunch of videos that I knew were wrong. I was like, this is not right. I still don't know what's right, but I know that this is not doing it right, and it was just some automated system churning out.
I know you're not both named Margulies.
You're not both Margulies. Anyway, Kirkesh Onake Ancient is a 4-mana 4/3, and it says whenever you activate an ability of an artifact, if it isn't a mana ability, so you can't go infinite, you may pay red. If you do, copy that ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. This is a great example of a card that, again, I'm looking for more mopey stats in an environment like this. So a 4-mana 4/3 is what I'm looking to be playing for the most part.
Wow. All 4-mana 4/3s.
And this ability to copy activated abilities is obviously quite good with Goblin Charbelcher, especially if it's in combination with any other ways to make the Charbelcher activation more consistent. But it also lends itself to a theme of other artifacts that have other activated abilities you could possibly abuse. The other first level synergies I had here were just Voltaic Key, Manifold Key, untap that Goblin Charbelcher, go again if you want. I don't realistically think that Rings of Bright Hearth is going to get there. That's just a Kirkesh that doesn't affect the board and is colorless. I don't really think it's going to work. But Kirkesh and Zerta specifically definitely sent me down a rabbit hole of just thinking, okay, what if we had a bunch of activated abilities in this cube that would allow you to companion Zerta and give you lots of things to potentially copy with Kirkesh? Which led me to some of my favorite categories of cards in Magic, which is little trinket artifacts with sacrifice abilities, the spell bombs, the skull bombs, that kind of stuff. Those are all great in this context, right? If you have Zerta, if you have Kirkesh, and you copy the ability on an Aether spell bomb or a Pyrite spell bomb or even a Metal Spinner's Puzzle Knot, it makes these little dinky cards quite powerful.
I mean, if you have enough Chromatic Spheres and Mishra's Baubles, are you even starting to shave lands from your deck?
Hopefully. And, you know, Prophetic Prism, stuff like that. I also like the idea of having lots of ways to splash four colors of mana so that you can maybe also play a
more
mono red mana base, like just mountain mana base, with these like trinket ways to fix. You have four or five ways to fix for your, you know, couple white pips or whatever in your deck. Could be a cool way to actually have a good Charbelcher deck come out of it too. And again, going one step further here to the third level of synergy, once you have all these spell bombs, that opens up so many cards, right? That's just like opening the floodgates on cards that are great. The ones I'll call out are some of the best ones, which are like Emry, Lurker of the Lock, Temeshi, Reality Architect, two of my favorite cards in this space. I want to call out one more of it. Doesn't actually work with Charbelcher, but is really interesting and feeds into this space in a cool way. And that's Ashnod the Uncaring. This is a classic commander card here. It's 5 mana, including full Grixis, for a 1/4 with Death Touch. Whenever you activate an ability of an artifact or creature that isn't a mana ability, if one or more permanents were sacrificed to activate it, you copy the ability and choose new targets. In some ways, I think this would become the actual focal point of this whole deck, right?
Yeah.
And it turns out that the spell bombs and puzzle knots and stuff just tend to always be better in Grixis colors. Like, I don't know why that is, but I was looking at all of them again, and like, yeah, most of these are kind of not that appealing, except for all the blue ones and the red ones and the black ones. They
the
just tend to be better.
The green ones are just, I mean, maybe the challenge is they are a little bit overcosted in some, but green, you know, it's like a lot of them gain you some life or get you a land, and it's like there are much more...
A lot
more
of them are just combat tricks, and it's like...
combat tricks. Like, there's just much more efficient ways to do that in green, where you're not additionally getting the synergy of, you know, getting paid off for drawing extra cards or for casting artifacts or for sacrificing things. You know, all the Grixis stuff.
Well, especially like if you're building a like synergistic engine, how much do you want to pump something in that engine, right? Like,
yeah.
You're always going to want to deal some chip damage here or there or bounce a thing. You can always find a use for that, but like how often can you find a use for pumping something? Like, it doesn't quite fit with what the colors really want to be doing. So, anyway, at Ashnod, I think, is a very cool centerpiece to that deck. And a great example of, you know, I think we sometimes are a little bit harsh on commander-focused designs or designs that we feel are like just if when you do X, Y, you know, kind of commander designs. And this is clearly that. But also, this is an example of this being, I think, really cool for Cube. If you want to have a theme like this, this is an awesome centerpiece to that theme. I also went down the route of top deck manipulation. You mentioned pretty much all the cards I think are worth mentioning, with only a couple exceptions. I do want to call out specifically Sphinx of Foresight and Curator of Mysteries. Sphinx of Foresight is that 4-mana 4/4 Sphinx that you can reveal from your opening hand to scry 3 at the beginning of your first upkeep. That's not why I like it here. I like it because it has a repeatable beginning of your upkeep scry 1. And again, I'm basing my cube I'm designing around Goblin Charbelcher on the assumption that even just dealing 2 damage reliably is pretty good. So if I scry something to the top and know it's not a land, I know I'm dealing at least 2, and I think that makes the card a lot better, and just having the knowledge of that one top card, I think, goes a long way.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of enchantments that have this exact text of, like, you get an extra scry at the beginning of your upkeep, and it is kind of funny if you're playing with Goblin Charbelcher that you're going to scry, and it's like, cool, it's not a land, I know I'll deal some damage to you, but then you don't get to keep that card anyway, so it kind of, like, negates the scry. But, you know, when you don't have Charbelcher in play, it's still providing some utility, so I think that's what kind of makes it work.
Yeah, it also, it just works with all the other stuff that cares about the top of your library, of which there are, again, a zillion examples. Curator of Mysteries, too, also is just a nice way to bridge the cycling theme and a top deck matters theme. It's the 4-mana 4/4. Whenever you cycle or discard a card, you scry 1, and it also has cycling for a blue. These cards are also pretty good on their base rate, a little better than everything else we've looked at, so I'm a little wary of that, but I'm not really thinking about balance that much at this point.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it in the sense that I'm like, I'm not going to put Snapcaster Mage in this cube or whatever, but I'm not thinking much further about it at this stage.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you gotta get a bunch of raw material together before you can actually see what's even possible.
And then the spiciest route I went down, I say spiciest as in this is a theme I almost never see supported in cube, and I think there's good reason for that. But
bottom of library matters. Here.
No, I mean, that is very cool. I actually was thinking about other circumstances, even in a more powerful cube where Charbelcher would be good, and that's just if the board is completely stalled, or you've just made it so nobody can attack. And so I actually started looking at cards for a like pillow fort or even possibly described as a prison deck where you can just lock the board up and then your inevitability is that I'm going to deal some amount of damage to you every turn with Goblin Charbelcher until this game is over.
Yeah, I mean, I think that fits a lot with like Curse Scroll and similar effects like that or the Anger of the Gods type control stuff. But yeah, I mean, you could also put Sphere of Safety or Blind Obedience or whatever kind of things from my favorite EDH decks of 2016 to play against.
The specific ones I wanted to call out, I really like when these kinds of effects are attached to creatures. Like Moat, not interested in playing with Moat in most of my cubes. Magus of the Moat? At least now it's a Moat that your opponents can interact with in much more ways. So Magus of the Moat, Peacekeeper, which is just a 3-mana 1/1 that says creatures can't attack and it has an upkeep cost of 1 and a white, is another card in this space. I also like Windborne Muse as a propaganda, again, attached to a creature. The one non-creature I want to call out is Arboria, which is a 2-green-green world enchantment, and it says creatures cannot attack a player unless that player cast a card or put a non-token permanent onto the battlefield during their last turn.
So I've read this card a couple times in the past, and I'm always like, what the hell's going on?
You can't play lands, you can't cast spells.
You just do nothing and nobody can ever attack you. So if the only way your opponent can kill you is by attacking with creatures, you've basically just locked them out of the game, right? Assuming they don't have a disenchant.
I mean, eventually one of you is going to die at decking, so that's the other question you have to ask yourself. But
they,
yes.
They might keep casting spells because they're not worried about that. They might cast some draw spells.
But yes, that is how this card ostensibly works as written. And it works on both sides of the battlefield, right? Your opponents can also choose to stop playing things, and then you can't attack them either. What I really like about this is that it is also just synergistic with all the activated abilities we just talked about. Because as long as your activated ability isn't putting a non-token permanent into play, which, I mean, there are ones that exist,
into the battlefield.
Like you can't activate sneak attack. That would turn off your Arborea.
You can't blink your, what's that little sloth called that puts
it does actually it does actually yeah I guess it doesn't work with the Astral Slide and Astral Drift deck specifically, because if you're blinking
anything that just gets blunked,
any blunking is going to turn it off. But if you're just cycling generically, if you're activating Goblin Charbelcher, if you're activating your Cursed Scroll or whatever,
but you just blink them on your opponent's turn, you're fine.
Creatures can attack a player on the battlefield during their last turn. Yeah, if you do it on end step, you're good. Do it after their combat step on their turn, and then you can do all this stuff as much as you want.
Yeah.
I mean, really, this doesn't really turn off instants at all, unless there is instance you have to cast it at a specific time.
Like, last turn.
It does kind of mess up counter spells, because... No, it's just during their last turn. So you can cast as much as you want on your opponent's turn.
Why is this card so hard to understand? This is.
I'm sure playing with it a couple times would sort it out.
I've read it a couple times and been like, not only do I not quite understand it, like the details of it, just my brain can't quite get around it. And also, it doesn't sound fun, so I'm not going to bother to try and get those details.
I think it's what a lot of people have perhaps rightfully done with all of these prison cards. And what I'll say about this is that I think just having a regular cube without any kind of like prisoner pillow fort theme and just throwing Arborea in there, that I would probably describe as a mistake in most contexts. Like, it is a very polarizing card that now you just say, oh, you don't have a disenchant, I guess you can never attack me ever again. That's not a great play pattern. If there are a fair number of these effects and it's becomes a known thing about the meta that, like, yeah, some decks are gonna like pillow fort up and work on their synergy pieces, then you can actually start to, you know, have a meta build around that and have people expect to have to answer a Peacekeeper or an Arborea as part of their deck's plan if they have to attack to win the game. Now, you can play Arborea and your opponent can still just kill you with their Viashino Pyromancer and their Keldon Marauders and their Keldon Champion, all those cards I mentioned previously. It's all starting to come together. I would describe myself as very skeptical of this theme, but I would continue to explore it. And just for fun, I did go to the second order of synergy here and just look up other cards that I thought were good inevitable win conditions if you can actually pillow fort up alongside Goblin Charbelcher. The ones I think are the most reliable are land-based ones. So Valakut the Molten Pinnacle, which also cares about number of mountains, which feels flavorful to me, and Shivan Gorge, which is just 3 mana to deal your opponent 1, well, 4 mana really, you gotta tap the gorge itself as well, to deal 1 damage to your opponent each turn. But they're lands, so they're really hard to interact with, so it gives you this, like, inevitability that is hard for your opponent to stop. A couple other things in this space. I did pull out Grindstone here. I mean, I think introducing Mill does open up a lot of questions, but Grindstone is actually kind of similar to Charbelcher in the fact that it is a artifact with an activated ability that progresses towards a win condition that has a bunch of variants in the activation. It's more efficient, generally speaking, than Charbelcher is, so that's a question to answer, but I think it's interesting to talk about here and figure out whether or not Mill is the thing you want to support. I also just called out Bosch Iron Golem because it can just huck artifacts at your opponent's face, which I think is very cool. And this is the kind of cube where I think Bosch could be fine. I think you can afford to get an 8-mana 6-7 with Trample into play because of all the other synergies. You can play it with Zerda. It just feels like it fits here.
Yeah, who doesn't love a good golem? One other thing we didn't talk about, and I was thinking about this and forgot to put on my list, is we could also just lean into sort of like full combo stuff. So if you're already trying to enable people, like especially if you're saying, okay, I want to just pack the cube with Olifants and Kazul's Fury so that they can play these like landless decks, maybe also put Hermit Druid in the cube and Laboratory Maniac.
I was literally just going to talk about Hermit Druid.
I'm sorry, go ahead, talk about Hermit Druid.
No, it's just, when I was thinking of similar cards to Goblin Charbelcher, the first thing I thought of was Cursed Scroll, and the next thing I thought of was Hermit Druid.
It's weird that because for me it was Trenchgorger and then
I didn't go through the Trenchgorger gate first. I had forgotten about that card and never thought about it since I last played it in Commander until you just said its name. But when you said it, I could picture the art perfectly. I knew exactly
what
it did.
It's got very memorable art.
Yeah, so Hermit Druid, for those who don't know, this is one and a green for a 1/1. You can pay a green and tap it to reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a basic land card, put that card into your hand, and the rest into your graveyard. Notorious combo card, because if your deck has no basic lands in it, you can just dump your whole deck in your yard, and there's a lot of ways in Magic's long storied history to win the game with your entire deck in your graveyard.
Classically, you cast Mortal Kombat.
That's the traditional way.
The combo piece of, not du jour, of all...
due time.
It's great. You'll love it.
I have been playing this card in the Neoclassical Cube, where you can't combo off with it in the sense that there is not a deck that can dump its whole contents into the graveyard and immediately just win. But there's a lot of decks that care about having things in the graveyard for various synergies. And also, the base rate of this card is just... a 2-mana 1/1 that for 1 mana draws you another land every single turn, which, if you're playing that fairly and you also have a couple of other additional things that care about the graveyard, can be quite good. Like, that's just a very good base rate if you're getting a little bit of that extra gravy on top. Like, I was playing in a deck, actually on Tuesday, where I had a Gaia's Blessing and a Time Spiral in the deck to reset my graveyard if I needed to. I had quite a few non-basic lands. I think I ended up with 6 basics or something like that. So I was milling over a good chunk of my library on average to my Hermit Druid activations. And in one game, I was able to like mill over almost all of my library. I drew the Gaia's Blessing and I was like, great, now I'll just shuffle my best cards back into my 7-card library and dramatically increase the card quality I'm drawing from for the rest of the game. And it won me the game. So I think this card has a lot of really interesting applications. What I like about it is that it's got an activated ability. It's dirtily, it's not going to kill you very quickly, and it also opens up a whole new door, right? Which we're not going to go through that door right now, because we're already at an hour long for this episode, but there's a whole other door there of things you can do with Hermit Druid once you're putting a bunch of stuff in the graveyard that is very cool and is like, that could be a focal card all in and of itself, so the exploration just continues until you've got a whole cube built out, basically.
You got a stew going.
So here's how I feel at the end of at least my exploration. I feel excited about exploring this basic land only mana fixing. And again, I'm including non-basics, but they're never non-basics tap for 2 colors. They're always non-basics that get you more basic lands. I'm excited about pursuing that. I am confident in how that cycling theme will play because I've experimented with that in cubes before. I think it's very cool, the connection with the Viashino Pyromancer and Keldon Marauders and making that actually tie into the Astral Slide deck. I think Xerda and Kirkesh and this artifact deck is very cool. I'm excited to explore it. The top deck manipulation seems obvious and fits right in with that too. A lot of those top deck manipulation cards also have activated abilities and also are artifacts. I'm skeptical of the prison stuff, but willing to at least venture that way. I feel like there's a sense of what aggro looks like, or at least at the beginning with this cycling deck. The biggest hole? I have no idea what black is doing.
Yeah, I struggled with black.
I pulled out exactly one black card, and it was Bulbous's Citadel, which is only kind of a black card.
Oh, what, interesting. You've never really built a cube with that card before,
look,
have
I
you?
I love Bulbous's Citadel, and it was literally the only black card that came up in any of my searches. I mean, save from a couple spell bombs with like black mana activations. I just don't know what black's doing.
What
here
about
yet.
Tortured Existence? That feels like it's touching on some themes.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I wanted to bring up is to say that we're doing this as an example of how you can build a cube, right? You can build your own cube this exact same way. You don't have to start with Goblin Charbelcher. You should start with whatever card excites you. And you might hit a point where you're like, great, I've filled out a couple big chunks of this cube, but there's still big holes left. What do I do now? And I think what you do now is just choose another, maybe even completely unrelated card in that zone that you could build around. So at this point, I would probably just find a black card that I thought was in the same ballpark of power level to what I was dealing with and did something cool that I wanted to experiment with. Even if it had nothing to do with artifacts, activated abilities, top or bottom of library, I'd intentionally be introducing like a new thing. And that is what I would do next if I was going to continue this exercise, is choose like, now I feel really pressured to pick a cool black card that...
I mean, can we just stick with Grenzo Dungeon Warden, or does it have to be mono black?
I think it's got to be mono black, okay, for fine. My purposes. I mean, to be clear, I'm definitely stealing your Grenzo idea and jamming that directly in this
cube. I'm surprised that you didn't pick or didn't think of that as well.
To be honest, I didn't, until I read the rules text on this podcast, remember that you got to choose the order. So
yeah, and it's got an activated ability, so it's perfect.
It fits. It goes great. I mean, Grenzo in your Xerda deck with Goblin Charbelcher,
yeah.
You got a stew going, baby. It's going. So for example, just trying to think of a cool black card I've never been able to make work in a queue before. Blood Funnel. I would just say, all right,
Blood Funnel.
Let's make Blood Funnel a thing as well, and I guarantee if you start going down the blood funnel tree of cards that work with blood funnel, do this exact same exercise, you will for sure find overlap with the other things going on in the cube, and it will all just make sense. I mean, isn't it just great with baubles, actually, now I think about it, and all the spell bombs and stuff?
Remind me what it does. It's like you can't... Whenever you cast a creature, you sacrifice a thing, but you cast things for free?
Whenever you play a non-creature spell, it's countered unless you sacrifice a creature.
Okay, right.
And non-creature spells cost 2 generic mana less, with no stupid stipulation like, it can't be less than 1. So if you're, so if you're sacrificing creatures, you can just play all of your spell bombs and stuff for free, which is kind of maybe interesting.
You just need, like, Sahelian play, so that you're also making tokens as you're casting all these non-creature spells.
Yeah, baby, now you got a Sahelian getting in there, too. See? And that's how you make a cube.
We've got all these things being sacrificed. What if we play Bitter Ordeal? Can you Bitter Ordeal yourself and take all your lands out of your deck?
Does it say target player? Oh, we got it.
Bitter Ordeal.
We got a very spicy stew going now. We are gravestorming ourselves to take our lands out of our deck to activate Goblin Charbelcher. That's what Black's doing.
Now I'm excited about
baby.
This cube.
Just now?
That's it.
You got excited about it in the last 2 minutes?
This is what... Yeah, I mean, hey, we made it.
We got there eventually.
Finish strong.
How do you feel about worrying it up? Do you think this cube has legs?
Yes.
What are your highest level concerns about it?
I have no concerns.
Wow.
No,
head empty, none. No concerns.
I think the biggest sort of digression from a lot of typical cubes that we play is that red, we're kind of talking about it not necessarily being an aggressive color and being a more slow, plodding, building up a machine
it's
kind of cube.
It's aggressive in my list still with the cycling and the Keldon Marauders and stuff.
Okay, well then I'm concerned about that.
Okay, I'm concerned about what you did.
But I think that's interesting space that I am not concerned because it's different enough that I would just need to experience what actually happened. And I guess I'd be concerned about actually playing Bitter Ordeal because that card is confusing.
Yeah, and also if you don't Bitter Ordeal yourself to make your Goblin Charbelcher better and instead you Bitter Ordeal your opponent and take all their non-lands out of their deck, that's not so fun.
But then you have time to slowly Charbelcher them while they do nothing.
While they draw nothing but lands.
It's funny how it just works either
Enjoy
way.
Enjoy those lands.
It's just a matter of do you want to do it fast or slow.
He also didn't mention Scroll Rack in the top deck manipulation, which I think is the best
rack.
One with Goblin Charbelcher.
Yeah, that's a good call.
It's very strong. Anyway, that's how you make a great cube. I'm sure this cube would be great.
I'm sure it would be a good starting point, and you'd want to play it, and a lot of things that we thought about would not work, and individual cards would feel busted or unplayable, and then you would just have to change it.
To be perfectly honest, I think the thing I'm most concerned about is how long the matches would take with this cube.
That's an interesting point. I wonder if at some point we'll start seeing people make a little digression and be like, this cube, we're just doing 2 rounds because we want to explore new space and that's just going to be longer games. And the 3 rounds that we usually play on a cube night is not going to facilitate that.
I don't know, but I've been so happy. We drafted the Neoclassical Cube on Tuesday and we still finished in like 2.5 hours the entire draft in 3 rounds. And I was like, yeah, it's the Andy Cube. We're going to get these games done. Felt good. And I was playing a prison deck. I gotta talk about this.
Okay.
So, I mean, everyone knows...
Time for the good beats.
Everyone knows upheaval with mana rocks. That's boring baby stuff. That's for toddlers. Oh, I flooded a bunch of mana, replayed on my mana rocks. Boring. What I did on Tuesday with upheaval in my green deck is I upheavaled floating 14. Well, I put 14 in my mana pool, spent 6 of it on upheaval. Had 8 left to work with. And played my land drop for turn, put Overgrowth on it, played Earthcraft, and now all of my creatures also produce 3 mana because I can untap my land with Overgrowth on it and just go absolutely dummy.
Yep.
So
that's
much more cool than mana rocks.
Pretty cool. I was going to follow
and
up.
And then my opponent conceded, so the match is still ended very early.
Yeah, that's the smart thing to do. I was going to share a story too, but I don't know if I can top that.
I just try.
Okay. I finally lived a years-old dream of attacking someone with Parhelion 2. It's taken me.
That was pretty cool. You had a big smile on your face. It was fun.
Yeah. Not for my opponents. They did not have a smile on their faces. But yeah, we were playing a cube that is, I mean, sort of in between classic vintage cube and my regular cube. It's like a lot of like bulk rares getting their chance to shine. But he's also, the designer has been experimenting with including a rare module of, you know, some more powerful build around type cards. I first picked Arkham Dagson, saw that Parhelion somewhere in the middle of the draft, and I was like, there's no way I'm putting this card that I literally cannot cast in my deck. But maybe it'll wheel. It obviously wheeled, and I put it in my deck, and it was like I just mulliganed a lot of the time without meaning to, but other times I got to attack with
Parhelion. You just mean because you had it in your hand. Yeah, and that's just effectively like, not a card.
Yeah.
But it was fun. Gotta have ways to loot, turn yeah. into a card.
No, I definitely, I could have drafted the deck so much better. And
what were
then
the,
it
you showed
been.
Me your first three picks because you leaned over and were like, look what I'm doing. And you had Arkham Dagson, Baleful Strix, and what was the last card?
Baleful Strix and, Bolas of Citadel.
Yeah.
That was okay. the target I was going for. But then I never tutored Bolas of Citadel. I always
got
Parhelion.
Well, you have Parhelion too. Why would you get Bolas of yeah. Citadel? One.
And then I actually also, the fourth card I had at that point was Asika's Chariot. So I was also trying to do this like vehicles thing because you could also tutor up the vehicles.
That card is so much better than the other cards we talked about. Why is Asika's Chariot being talked about?
Because you know what it did? It crewed Parhelion.
It's very cool. It's extremely cool.
Get in the chariot. Put the chariot in the spaceship.
In the huge space city made of angels.
Yeah, what a silly game.
Well, on that bombshell, that concludes this episode of Lucky Paper Radio. Next week, we are going to bring you our Outlaws of Thunder Junction community set review. So have your podcatchers peeled for that. Podcatchers peeled. How do I feel about that phrase? Well, I've said it, so it's on the record now. By the time this episode airs, our pre-order will also have closed for the playmat. Thank you to everybody that ordered one. You'll be getting an email probably today is my plan. But today is in the day this episode comes out to ask you to confirm a bunch of details, your shipping address, all that kind of stuff. And then, get these bad boys into production. I'm looking forward to doing that. Oh. This is the last week for you to decide to attend the UberCube event at the Gathering Place in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
It's what that's the weekend after this airs?
Yes.
Okay, so you don't have much time.
You don't have much time, but if you're in the area, you should be going to this event.
Get over there.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're within, what do you want to call it, a two-hour drive of Chapel Hill, North Carolina?
Three?
Yeah, it's the south. They can drive longer down there. Things are further away. If you're in a three-hour drive of Chapel Hill, North Carolina, you should go to this event. Go meet other cube designers. Go hang out. Play the best format in the world.
I've heard great things about the shop that it's being hosted at.
Yeah. A couple people in the Discord have said they visited that shop and said it's a great spot. There's actually like pretty substantial prize support for the event, too, which... it's never the thing that's going to get me to go because I'm never going to win. So I'm never looking at that. But there's pretty good prize support too. So if you're down for playing for stakes, that's a good thing for you to do as well. Check out that event. We also did make an events page for our website, which we never mentioned on the podcast, which I'll put in the show notes just to keep track of all the various cube events that are going on because on air, we tried to remember all of them a couple weeks ago and really struggled. So I made a little page just to put them all in one place. That's at just luckypaper.co/events. So check that out as well. And if you're hosting an event, even better, tell me so I can put it on luckypaper.co/events and mention it on the podcast. That's it. Now we're really done.
Great.
All of our music is produced by DJ James Nasty. All the magic cards are produced by Wizards of the Coast. This podcast is produced by thinking really hard about one magic card, Goblin Charbelcher, and then speaking into microphones about it. Belch, belch, Anthony.
Always be Charbelching.